Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Football Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. Joining me tonight, Dominic Petrillo. What's going on, Dom?
Not too much. A flurry of trades here normally don't happen at the end of the trade deadline, but they did today, so let's get to it and talk about them.
Yeah, the NFL is emulating the fantasy football world a little bit here, jamming in some trades. It's good to see, though. That was always one of the big disappointments in the sports season when the NFL trade deadline would come and go, and there'd be like one special team removed for, like a conditional pick. So, yeah, flurry of activity. I count five pretty big name trades today happening. Had a couple even last week. You know, you had the Amari Cooper trade. That's obviously been examined pretty thoroughly. The Giants, they shed some parts that they didn't think they needed any longer, and cornerback Eli Apple and defensive tackle Damon Harrison. Harrison, the more notable one there, he's a premier run stopper. His only problem is staying on the field. New York needs to do that. They their season is lost. They're just kind of playing out the string and should be accumulating assets wherever they can.
Yeah, as a Saints fan, I'm kind of upset they gave Eli Apple to the Saints. You know, if they were really tanking for the season, they should have kept him in New York and, right, let his mom play in the secondary or something.
Yeah, I answered a bunch of people on Twitter who said the NFC East, three-fourths got better today. And once to Pat, I said, not true. The Giants got rid of Eli Apple and they got better.
Exactly.
So, for as much as he takes flack-wise, he's actually probably a slightly above replacement corner, and the Saints were desperate. So, we'll see if he can maybe get a little bit of a change of course down there in New Orleans. The Snacks Harrison trade to Detroit is an interesting one because they add a piece that, they didn't give a ton up. They gave up a fifth rounder, but, they're a buyer last week, and then this week they go and sell one of their top receivers, Golden Tate, to the Eagles for a third-round pick. So, it's a question of, is it a clash of styles? Is Golden Tate not really this coaching staff's guy? They've got plenty of receiver talent. Did the loss over the weekend to Seattle show them something? Maybe the front office said, if we can't beat Seattle at home, we're not going anywhere in the playoffs. Let's get what we can for Golden Tate. And then on the Eagles side, sending a third rounder, it's an interesting situation. So here's the breakdown that you need to know about this trade. So Golden Tate, he's on an expiring deal. If he's re-signed for anywhere, any kind of decent money, the team that he leaves is going to receive a compensatory pick probably at the end of the third round. If he really falls off, it could be like a fourth, fifth rounder, but with his production, if he just stays consistent, the Eagles are getting a 2020 third rounder when he gets signed following this season. So they're really just moving back a year in exchange for Golden Tate this season. I really like that. What about you, Dom?
I like it as well. I think Tate fits in there in Philadelphia. I know that he's going to be a possession receiver, much like Aguilar and I keep forgetting the name of the guy they keep bringing back, Jordan Matthews.
Yep.
Yeah, but, he is much better. Obviously, he had 120 targets last year. He had 92 catches. He was hobbled for a lot of the year. He played in all 16 games. He only started 12 of them, but he did have a 76% catch rate, whereas Alshon Jeffrey had the same 120 targets last year, but he only had 57 receptions, so he had less than a 50% catch rate. So he does have very good hands. And on the other side from Alshon Jeffrey, he could for sure upgrade that offense that right now they're leaning, as much as he's good, they're leaning too much on Zach Ertz having 18 more receptions and 19 more targets than any other tight end in the league.
And that's what this trade about is for me more than anything, is Zach Ertz has broken down many of the seasons he's played so far. He's a guy who gives 100%. He grinds. He's out there. He's a run after the catch kind of a big receiver. So he's taken a ton of punishment with no consistency outside of him in the receiving game for the Eagles. So I think that Howie and this front office knew, we're playing with fire here. We can't keep relying on Zach Ertz and asking Zach Ertz to take this kind of punishment game in and game out. I know they're not in first place in the division, but they're a game and a half out, and Washington, They've done some nice things too. We'll talk about them next year, but that offense is not exactly scaring anyone. Alex Smith has failed to go over 200 passing yards for three straight games. So, you know, the Eagles are still definitely within striking distance, and they've got to play a little bit better than they've played.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of this is about, is playing better. And you said they're playing with fire with Zach Ertz, and that's true, but they're also playing with house money because of the Super Bowl last year that nobody thought they were going to win. And, right, you know, Philadelphia, they're already down on them, but they're not going to be any, you know, more down on them than they were before the Super Bowl. So, you know, might as well go for broke in the next couple of years while you have Carson Wentz coming into his prime and in his prime, and Golden Tate's only 30 years old, so he can be there for another 3 or 4 years. I can see this being like an Alshon Jeffrey, where they signed him for the one-year prove-it deal and then extended him. And, you know, if they see what Tate can do here, they could extend him for a couple of years, because they did, you know, restructure some contracts, so they have some cap room for next year, so they could possibly re-sign him.
Right. Yeah, that's. It wouldn't shock me at all if he stays on an interesting deal with the Eagles. All right, so then moving to division rival Washington, they went out and got HaHa Clinton Dix for a fourth-round pick. You know, that's a pretty good price. That's one of the few that I've actually kind of perked up and said, that's a deal, because he was a first-round pick not that long ago. He's an immediate plug-in starter, one of the better safeties in the league. So, you know, Washington's sending a clear sign. We think we're going to win this division, and – you know, our defense is the part that needs the most help, which I kind of disagree with. I think their wide receiver core needs the most help, but I guess they think they're going to get some guys healthy. What's your breakdown on this one, Dom?
Yeah, they need to get more people healthy, because, you know, obviously Crowder's been missing some time, Richardson's missing some time, so when they get them back, they should be healthier. But as you said, Alex Smith hasn't really been doing anything. Chris Thompson now has a rib injury, yeah. So I agree with you. They should have done something on the offense, not the defense. But they need to get this defense more stacked, because they know their offense isn't going to get much better, and they do have Josh Norman now in the back of, as well as HaHa Clinton Dix. So as a solid secondary back there, their front seven's already playing pretty good. They played pretty good last week. They've been playing pretty good all week, or all year, other than obviously against the Saints on Monday night, the week after their bye week. But other than that, they've been doing pretty good this year. So I think that this just helps solidify their defense, and they're really going after the division title this year.
Yeah, and now they've got two of PFF's top three rated safeties. And I don't know if you saw this last week, but DJ Swearinger, I believe, is rated as the top safety of the week, just in front of HaHa Clinton Dix. But PFF, on their Twitter feed, they put out, you know, the top five and used a picture of HaHa Clinton Dix. And it kind of hurt Swearinger's feelings a little bit. So then the team goes out and trades for Clinton Dix this week.
And now he's going to be on the front of the program coming right to the game this week, too, right, probably.
Swearinger's bobblehead night just got pushed back.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, you know, the real shocker here with Clinton Dix is that the Kansas City didn't get him, because they need any secondary help they can get. You know, for a fourth round pick, the Chiefs have kind of something special going here, and I get that they've got a lot of young parts, but the NFL is so unpredictable. You're really in the driver's seat right now. You've got a chance to make yourself stronger for a fourth round pick. Like, how do you not do that? Or maybe they played hardball. That's kind of one of my takes here, is that they could have been told by Green Bay, okay, what are you going to offer? We've got a fourth rounder here, and they say, okay, we'll do a fourth rounder too. And Green Bay comes back and says, no, it's got to be a third rounder. And Kansas City just kind of sticks to their guns. So that's a possibility, because in the trade market, you don't know what the other side is telling you truthfully or not.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, if you think about it too, the Kansas City fourth rounder is almost like a fifth rounder if their right record holds up and they actually get to the Super Bowl and everything. Whereas Washington, even if they win the division, they'll probably be a first round exit, so they'll be in the middle of the first round somewhere in the low 20, so it's a better pick for them anyway. So it'd make more sense for Green Bay to try and get a third rounder from Kansas City than it would a fourth rounder. So, right. But I agree with you too. They never should have, you know, obviously they had to get rid of Marcus Peters because he didn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. But obviously, just imagine how this team would be if they still had Marcus Peters there and he was playing up to his ability in that secondary with that offense.
Yeah. And that was kind of weird. I mean, I get, like you said, moving on from him, but not replacing him. Now, you know, maybe they didn't realize what they had exactly in Pat Mahomes, that he was going to turn into an arcade game and basically destroy everything. But yeah, that was a shocker that they didn't get any pass rush help, they didn't get any secondary help. But their loss is Washington's gain. So what do you think about the NFC East now? You know, it kind of seems like a two-horse race. I know Dallas is still lingering out there, but they still have to play the Eagles twice, I believe. I don't see Dallas being in this race. So do you say, well, Washington or Philly? I know we're both Philly guys, so we've got to tinge it with some optimism.
I still think Philly has the upper hand here. I think their offense is much better. Their rush defense is way better. You know, the rush defense is probably the best unit out of all four of these units, talking offense and defense. So with that being said, I think that the Eagles still have the inside track. They do have the best quarterback. Sorry, Alex Smith. You know, they have the best wide receivers. The run game, obviously, Washington maybe a little better there. But I do think that Philadelphia, because they still have to play Washington as well. You're right, they do play Dallas twice. They play them in week 10 coming out of their bye, and then they play them again, I believe, the last week of the year, I believe. They play Dallas or the week before that. So they do have to play Dallas twice. I believe they still play the Giants again. They're still going to play Washington again. So they still have four division games left. And they tend to beat up on this division pretty good. So I think that that could be at least three wins, possibly four. So that gets them to 7 or 8. And they do have some tough games left. They still have to play the Saints. But they also, you know, they lost to the Buccaneers. But then they're going to be playing, and they beat Atlanta already. So now they beat Carolina. You know, so that's pretty much their whole division, or their whole interconference schedule. You know, now we just have to worry about what they do, you know, in the out-of-conference schedule. They still have to play the Texans, which is, looks like it's going to be harder now than we thought of before. You know, They just beat Jacksonville, and, you know, now they're going to go and they lost to Tennessee, so they have the one out-of-schedule game, or out-of-division conference game left as well. So we'll see what happens there, but I do think Philadelphia has the edge over Washington, and I agree, Giants are just nothing, and Dallas will probably finish third, and they'll probably be 7-9 or 8-8.
Yeah, the Saints is a game to worry about. They're going down to the Dome. We'll see what happens there. The Rams also on the horizon. The good thing there, though, is that's week 15, I believe. And, you know, L.A. is probably going to be sitting pretty cushy. They're probably not going to need that win for very much other than possibly home field throughout. But I think they'll even have that in the driver's seat. So, you know, do you really want to get into a slugfest with the Eagles, who are kind of hungry and desperate, where, you know, last game, last year when they went out and played, it was like just a back and forth, you know, stand them up, knock them down game. And both teams kind of felt the effects of that for the rest of the season. The Eagles obviously lost Carson Wentz in that game. So, you know, if you're the Rams, you maybe come into it with not the same intensity.
Yeah, that could be a case for sure. And they played in L.A. last year. Did they play in L.A. again? This year is in Philadelphia, because if it's week 15, it's going to be in the middle of December. In Philadelphia, it's going to be cold anyway with the West Coast team coming east. And I would be careful, because I'm a Saints fan. But so I think with the Rams, this is going to be a great game this week. The Rams going to the Saints. And I think the Saints could beat the Rams and give them their first loss. And then they would be tied with the Rams and have the tiebreaker over them for the number one seed.
Yeah, oddly enough, I'm seeing here that it is in L.A.
That's weird. 2 years in a row.
Yeah, it doesn't make too much sense. I don't know if L.A. being a transfer was having to play into that at all. But yeah,
could be. That'll still be a pro Eagles crowd, just like it was with Green Bay last week.
That's very true. All right, next big trade here, Demaryius Thomas going from the Broncos to the Houston Texans for a fourth-round pick. They also swapped seventh-round picks, which I kind of find hilarious because neither team is all that good. Like, that's kind of a little bit of a pissing contest between the GMs, I think, saying, you know, why don't we swap seventh-rounders and see whose is higher?
Yeah, I think that, obviously, I think Denver's is going to be higher, because I think they're just the worst team. I know Houston's been playing really good lately. They just lost Will Fuller here on last Thursday against Miami to the torn ACL. He just can't seem to stay healthy. QT's probably not going to play this week. He may not play again next week in week 10. So, you know, if that's the case, then they're just going to, you know, they needed Demaryius Thomas here to fill out. I don't know if they're going to keep him for next year. It would cost them $17.5 million if they do. So I think this is just a rental, and Fergus, a fourth-round pick when you have aspirations in a weakened, obviously, AFC to get to the Super Bowl, which I don't think they're going to, but they have those aspirations. It's a fourth-round pick isn't bad for a player like Demaryius Thomas, who's going to be there. He hasn't missed a game yet, and, you know, he's even an upgrade over Will Fuller at full health, let alone with Will Fuller being out now. So across from DeAndre Hopkins, he could have a monster second half.
Yeah, he's a nice, reliable player. Isn't the deep threat he once was, but takes a little bit of the burden off of Nuk, Hopkins, and also some insurance in case Hopkins goes down. You know, they've got a guy who's been the man before. Their situation very similar to Washington. It's they find themselves in first place, kind of surprisingly. The coaching staff is running out of rope here, and know that they need to go probably. They probably need at least a first round win in the playoffs to stick around. So, these kind of situations always confuse me a little bit. As a fan, I get going for it, but as somebody with kind of an analytical approach, it doesn't make that much sense to sacrifice future assets for a rental. When you if you took an objective look at that Texans team, I don't see them beating the Chiefs, the Patriots, a lot of the teams that they're going to need to go through. But hey, it'll make for an interesting playoffs. You're on the price. Fourth rounder is not bad for DT. He's he's still on the tail end of his prime. He hasn't quite fallen off a la Andre Johnson just yet. But I don't see them re-signing him. He's probably going to be in the Andre Johnson track next season. All right, next trade here. You've got the Jaguars trading Dante Fowler for a 2019 third round pick and a 2020 fifth round pick. Didn't think the Jacksonville would be sellers. They definitely had Super Bowl aspirations after getting so close last season, but a good assessment of themselves, saying, we're not where we want to be. This guy's kind of been a locker room issue. Former first round pick, but hasn't given the production that we expected when we drafted him. And they get two solid picks back here. 2020 fifth rounder doesn't do too much for you, but a third round pick is definitely interesting. And then on the Rams side, they're basically treating their draft picks like Monopoly money, and just, who needs draft picks?
Yeah, I mean, when they're getting all the players they're getting, who needs them? It's funny, they were saying before Mac was traded to Chicago, the Rams were actually going to sign Mac as well, and that would have been amazing to see Mac, Sue, and Donald, on the one line. Now, Fowler, obviously he's not Mac by a long shot, but he is better than what they had there. He's the number three overall pick a couple years ago. He missed the whole rookie year with a torn ACL. He played solid last year, as the whole defense did. But as you said, he's just a locker room issue, just like he was at Florida before he got here, just like pretty much everybody that comes out of Florida is, other than Tim Tebow, and we see how he panned out. But I just think that this is a major upgrade for the Rams, and they are going for it all in this year. They saw what they had last year with McVay, and they love McVay. They love how Goff's doing it. They want to make sure that they have Gurley in his prime. Obviously their wide receivers are all on monster seasons this year. Before Cup got injured, they were all averaging on pace for over 1,300 yards. So this is just a great offense, and now that they thought they had a great defense, and now it's even getting better. So this could be the team to beat, obviously, coming out of the NFC, although I think it's going to be a great matchup against the Saints, as I said earlier this week, to see who is the top in the NFC.
Yeah, it feels like the Rams every week are in that game determining who's the top NFC team. But yeah, Fowler should help them with their pass rush. They figure to be in a lot of shootouts, and that's a nice piece there. Just the price for me, a little steep. You've got Sean McVay. He's a young coach. I would think, you obviously always want to give yourself the best chance to make a deep run into the playoffs that you can, but with McVay under contract, I would think you would want to surround him with as much young talent as possible.
I mean, and he is talented, though, but the funny thing is, I don't know if you saw the tweet yesterday from Odd Sharks, but McVay is actually the favorite to be the coach of Cleveland, which
is no idea where
funny.
That came from. Has anyone explained that?
That's funny to me, too, because Lincoln Riley was second, and I think it's going to be John DeFilippo. He was, I think, fourth or fifth, but it was funny to me when I saw that. I was like, why would he ever want to leave Los Angeles to go to Cleveland? I mean, they're saying, he has Baker Mayfield. Well, he still has Jared Goff, and he's basically the same age, actually, as Mayfield, so it's crazy to think that he would even want to go to Cleveland, let alone take an interview.
The only argument I could see is money. Like, they could throw enough money at him to do it, but McVay's a smart guy. Like he's getting paid. He's probably going to get paid when his renewal's up if he continues at all on this same track. You know, he's got a smoking hot wife. He lives in L.A. Like what more could Sean McVay want out of life? Like he's just
exactly.
He's living it.
He's making $6 million probably a year now, something like that. You know what? Even if he gets Gruden money, that's $10 million. But he could have a Super Bowl in L.A. or be in the bottom of the AFC and
right.
You know in Cleveland. Is that worth $4 million a year? Maybe it is to him, but I don't know.
Right. I mean, you don't even need to win a Super Bowl. You make it to the Super Bowl, like we saw with Jeff Fisher. You know, the rest of your career, somebody's gonna pay you.
Yep. John Harbaugh.
Yeah. Same thing. You know, you're set. So. That one blew my mind that they had him as the favorite. But yeah, I hope John D doesn't go there. I like him too much though. He did put a stint in when they drafted Johnny Manziel as QB's coach. So that's a possibility. But we'll see what happens. That Browns team's probably gonna stink for a little bit here with Greg Williams taking over as coach. He's not exactly the most forward thinker.
Exactly. I sent out a tweet yesterday. I sent it to Sean, the odds maker. Mm-hmm. He was looking for props for his podcast, and I sent him who's going to make more money this year, Le'Veon Bell, if he actually comes back for a week, or the players on the defense of Cleveland for getting bounties to go after the offensive players on the other team.
Yeah, that was a big topic this week. You know, are they going to open up the bounty fund? But yeah, so that's the Rams. They got better, and a lot of NFC teams getting better here. So interesting. A couple of more minor trades here. You've got Ty Montgomery going to the Ravens for a 2020 seventh rounder, which you know in a trade calculator is basically a worthless pick. They got something instead of cutting him. So kudos there because they basically signaled as an organization this guy's done. You know, they threw him under the bus in interviews a little bit. Obviously, you could tell Aaron Rodgers and the coaching staff was not happy with him with him taking the ball out at the end of the game there and then fumbling it. You know, he came out and said his feelings were hurt. It just kind of seemed like a situation that was going to be a distraction. And the Packers are not about that. They don't do distractions. So here's your ticket to Baltimore, Ty Montgomery. And now he finds himself in a backfield with Alex Collins and Buck Allen. Not dissimilar to the backfield he just left. You know, it's there's no clear-cut path to touches. You know, it's probably got the same role. I don't think you want to roster Ty Montgomery if you can avoid it.
Yeah, if you have him, I think this is a big step backwards anyway, so you can probably drop him just because the Ravens' offense obviously is not the Packers' offense, as Joe Flacco isn't Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And as you said, they do have two running backs that are pretty much entrenched there already, being, you know, with Buck Allen being the pass catching down out and Alex Collins being the running back there. But I do think that Buck Allen's going to get more play here with Alex Collins fumbling last week. But yeah, that's the same thing that Buffalo gave, obviously, to Cleveland for Corey Coleman, so that just tells you what Green Bay was really thinking of Ty Montgomery after they, you know, wanted to get rid of him, because they actually said he had a little meltdown and temper tantrum on the sideline before he even fumbled that ball. So, you know, so that was just the end of it, I'm sure, for, you know, Aaron Rodgers. And I think this is really good news for Aaron Jones, who Aaron Rodgers wanted out there anyway. Now this is a real big path for him to get a lot more rushes, which he should have gotten anyway.
Yeah, that it does help the Green Bay backfield for sure. It kind of buoys both guys. Yeah, you said Aaron Jones has got a little more snap share coming up, and then you also have
Jamal Williams. You got the touchdown against the Rams.
Yeah, and you know he's kind of the sole passing guy, and he's passable. He's serviceable in the passing game. He's, you know, obviously not the dynamic playmaker Aaron Jones is, but he's shown at times he can do something with a screen pass. So, you know, I've got some best ball shares of Jamal Williams that are just screaming out for some attention. So, you know, something's better than nothing. They turned three-headed monster into a two-headed monster.
Now they have to go play the Patriots and their two-headed monster this week.
Yeah, and that's – I kind of think that this trade for Baltimore is about not letting the Patriots sign him as much as getting another running back, because they didn't need a running back. They just saw a guy who would be a perfect fit for New England and said, you know, well, let's not let him get cut. Let's give him, like, I don't know, a 27th rounder. Let's see if they take it. And they did. So, you know, that's another head scratcher, a team that stood pat. I know they just traded for Josh Gordon, and you know, you can't empty all your bullets trading these days, but I don't really get that the Patriots didn't add any back. You know, they're going forward with Kenjon Barner and James White, and I guess Cordarrelle Patterson running the ball. He had a couple of moments on Monday night, but he doesn't look like a great fit. I wouldn't want to be, you know, handing the ball off to him in a playoff scenario at all. That one puzzles me. What's your take on the Patriots standing pack, Dom?
I think it shows that they really think Sony Michel's going to be coming back soon, and I think they said he could have played possibly this week, and he didn't, so he may be back next week, and if that's the case, Kenyon Barter makes a good, you know, just a change of pace, third back there, you know, a Bolden play, or, you know, Jeremy Hill in the goal line type thing, where he was just that come in for maybe a series to rest the other guys, whatever. But I really have, like, James White here. I've loved him all year. I think he's going to be better than Sony Michel anyway, just because he has that pass catching down back. And he had a great game last night. And I think it's going to be the same thing going forward. He's going to be the pass catching down back there. Sony Michel's going to be the running down back there. And they're just going to machine into the playoffs like they always do.
Yeah, I've got Sony in a couple key spots, so I'd be good with that. Like you said, he did get a light practice in at the end of the week. I don't buy into that too much. I'm gonna want to see him back, you know, at least in pads by the end of this week. And even then, you know, he's had knee issues. It's scary. So, but that, I guess, not doing anything there is a good sign for what they think about his prospects to return.
Yeah, exactly. Much like, I think, you know, with Fournette coming back as well, I don't know what's going to happen with Hyde down there for that trade that they made a couple weeks ago. That's going to be iffy. I think that really ruins Hyde for the rest of the year.
Yeah, he did not have a very good stat line. Granted, it was against the Eagles, who you just don't run on the Eagles. It's not going to happen. So, Fournette is probably going to be back. Barring him going down for another extended period, I think your Carlos Hyde shares are dead. And then a couple other teams here just to touch on that stood pat, that you know, should have been sellers and really weren't. You've got the Raiders, and I mean, I know they traded Amari Cooper, and they got a really nice price for him. But they had some more pieces, a couple guys on the defense that were older. And as a couple of our FWFB colleagues have pointed out in our staff chat, the Raiders have been going younger on defense, playing their younger guys. I mean, that just means they should have been even more willing to take anything for a guy like Leon Hall, or, you know, if you could work out a contract split on Bruce Irvin, just get something. You know, you're clearly have signaled that you're accumulating assets, that this year is in the tank for you. Any take on the Raiders, Dom?
Yeah, the Raiders are just terrible. I didn't like John Gruden as a coach before. He just shows why he was in TV so long. It's just amazing. You always want, you know, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. And that's basically what happened here with the Raiders. There's actually a website out there. I don't know if you heard about it. It's called isgrudenstillhere.com. And you go there, and it has a countdown of how many days until the end of his 10-year contract. And then underneath that is another count up, basically, of how much money he's made since you've been on the page. So it's, you know, even the Raiders fan want him out of there. He's just a terrible coach. I think it's just past his time. And as you said, they're trying to get younger. They need to get younger. That's why they have the 5 first-round draft picks in the next 2 years. Hopefully he's able to do something with them. He doesn't take 5 quarterbacks, which you never know with him. He may do. But we'll see what happens with his first-round draft picks. I don't think he's a good drafter. I don't think he's a good coach. And unfortunately, I think they're going to be bad for a long time.
Yeah, that's I don't know how they're going to get out from under that contract. Like, you got to get at least 7 years into the 10-year contract. You can't be paying him, you know, more than a few years for not working. But we'll see. You know, their owner is also the kind of guy who I would think would just keep John Gruden around and be friends with him and not really care about what happens on the field.
Oh, yeah. Plus, he's so cheap, he's not going to want to pay a coach that's not there.
Right. And then you got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers also standing pat. I get you know, this coaching staff is on its last leg. They've got to make the playoffs here or they're done. I get not wanting to hamstring them and give them the best opportunity to show that they've got something. But, you know, you could have moved a guy like Djax, and you've got another man right behind him in Chris Godwin who can fill in as well or arguably better than Djax. You know, there's probably a piece or two on defense that they maybe could have moved. You know, just kind of start your rebuild here. I know they're 3-4. They're not out of it, but and there's the whole Jameis conversation. Like, there's teams that need a quarterback, like Jacksonville. You know, do you move on from him? So with the whole Jameis thing, it's interesting. My understanding of his contract is next year they've got to pay him, you know, for that final year or cut him. And if he's healthy, they can cut him. So it behooves them to not use him the rest of this season if they have any intention of saving that cap hit and cutting him. So, you know, that's an interesting one there that kind of plays into the Fitzpatrick getting brought in. The problem is Fitzpatrick, I don't see him lasting another 8 games or 9 games I think they have left.
Yeah, I think Fitzpatrick can last. Fitzmagic isn't going to last that long, though, right. And that's their issue is they may, as you said, they're trying to keep their jobs, and if Fitzmagic doesn't keep happening, then they're going to go back to Winston, which is the worst thing they can do. He had 10 interceptions in, you want to say, technically 4 games. So it was actually 3 because it was the second half of one game, the first half of another game, and then the 2 in between. And I think I wrote an article a couple weeks ago that I thought they should have traded Winston to the Giants. You know, Giants need somebody to replace Eli Manning. Winston could use a new change of pace, although I don't know how he would handle New York. And obviously, I don't know if you heard, but Kyle Loletta just got arrested this morning for DUI. So we don't know if he's going to make it there or not. I think but like I said, I agree with you. They shouldn't play him the rest of the year because his contract is only guaranteed for injury. So if they don't play him, he can't get injured. And I think no matter what, Dirk Cutter and their GM ought to be out because they're just doing a terrible job there, especially Dirk Cutter. He's supposed to be a quarterback whisperer. He hasn't been able to do anything with Winston. Their defense is terrible. The only person they may have been able to get something for is Gerald McCoy, and he's injured right now, so you weren't really going to get anything for him. And they should have traded Djax, but who knows what he's going to – teams may not have wanted him because he's due $10 million next year. And I love Chris Godwin. I think he's gonna ball out with Fitzpatrick just like he did in the first 3 weeks with Fitzpatrick. So I love Godwin going forward. I love Jackson going forward and Evans. Obviously, you're not going to do a running back there, but they should have traded Winston. I completely agree with that. They could have gotten maybe a third rounder, maybe even a second rounder from the Giants for him.
Yeah, the Giants make sense on paper. I think as a kind of like a team culture, they would not want to touch him. I mean, if I was a GM, I would not want to have anything to do with you know, what he's become, the sideshow. And just from a play standpoint, I get he's got some decent stats. You know, last year he finished out the second half really strong, but I don't think he's going to ever be a guy who wins a Super Bowl.
Oh no, he's just he's a jag at quarterback. I completely agree. You know, he may have learned some maturity from Odell Beckham, which is sad to say.
Yeah, that's, you know, and as far as Djax, that's a good point. He's owed a lot of money, and he can be his own kind of locker room headache. So, but there was interest in him. You know, the teams were talking about him, and you probably had to give him away. But you know, a 6th round pick for Djax is better than nothing when you've got Chris Godwin, like you said, in the stable. So,
yeah, absolutely. And they said that there were a lot of teams interested, but that the GM and the coach didn't want to get rid of them because they know that they have to win to keep their jobs, and they didn't want to make it harder on themselves, as you said earlier. But there were reports saying that that's the reason that they didn't trade Djax.
Yep. And then kind of the last trade piece I got is the Le'Veon Bell story. The saga continues. Doesn't report today, so he obviously couldn't be traded, having not signed his franchise tender. We'll see tomorrow if he's back. There's a lot of James Conner owners out there holding their breath. They would love to see something happen here, but that'll be an interesting timeshare when he's actually back. I mean, my expectation there is probably if he comes back this week, I don't see him being active for the game. I think that's kind of an easy one. They need to reacclimate him, and you know he's got to mend some fences. Then the following game, you say, you know, we expect him to play about 30 snaps, and then kind of a 50-50 split going forward from there. So you've got a couple weeks of effective James Conner left at the least. And even then, I could see Conner handling, like, the rushing work and Lev Bell handling the passing work, something along those lines. Do you have any feelings on the Bell situation, Dom?
Yeah, I actually just wrote an article about it today. I just think that Bell's played himself out of a big contract next year. He's played himself out of Pittsburgh. Obviously, they're not going to re-sign him. If he does come back, you know, it's going to take, like as you said, 2 weeks. It took him 4 weeks last year to get into shape and everything, and that was after only missing training camp. Now he's missed training camp plus, you know, 9 weeks. It's going to take him even longer, and I think that he's just going to hurt value for everybody. If they wanted to, they could sign him to the franchise tag and then just keep him inactive for the rest of the year, not have to pay him. If they do that, you know, if it were me, I would do that just because, you know, the hell with him. Why would you want to put him on the team? He's just going to ruin that. I mean, I know he's never been a bad locker room guy, they say, but he would ruin that locker room quicker than a Jameis Winston or a Terrell Owens or anybody like that with the way that he's been treating that team and everything else. The only person that he's even talking to on that team is James Conner. They said he texts and says, you know, good play or good run or whatever, but he won't talk to anybody else on that team. So at least he's helping out the young guy, but with what he's done there and even the offensive line, usually when somebody holds out, they're like, oh, you know, we understand it's a business. You know, they're basically like, F you, we don't want him here. We don't care. And they like Conner better anyway, because he likes to make his own holes. They only have to block for 1 or 2 seconds, and he busts through the line like an Adrian Peterson or a player like that, where Le'Veon Bell is more like a scat back like Barry Sanders, where he takes 15, 20 seconds, it seems like, to find a hole and then goes through it. So they have to block for so much longer that it just hurts their body. And so they like James Conner better anyway in that sense as well, just as a ball player, not even as a person. So I think going forward they would use James Conner more of a 70-30 split if he did come back, but I'm hoping he just doesn't come back and just sits out the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate that. You know, if I was a GM, I would consider doing that on a team that was kind of in a normal situation. The problem is with Ben probably being in his last or second to last season, you know, you've got an offensive line that's been together and cohesive. That's kind of rare to have happen every season. Their defense is starting to crumble. I you know, they got a little better here coming out of the bye, but you know, I don't think you can afford to give him an FU back and say you sit at home, you're not playing the rest of the season. And if something happens to James Conner, then you got to call him up and say, well, you know what, why don't you come in? We need you now. And then the other side of that is also that Conner is really getting a ridiculous workload. Le'Veon knows all too well how that goes. It would be really good to split it up a little bit with two effective guys and have them fresh for the playoffs. You know, like you said, Conner is the better rusher, it seems. Definitely a capable receiver, but I think Bell is probably a little bit above him in the receiving game. So, you know, that's a nice way to kind of get both guys involved. But definitely something that's gonna be interesting as the season plays on, and people who have gotten where they are in their fantasy seasons on the back of a very cheap or free James Conner. You know, how are they going to fare in the playoffs, losing him possibly?
Absolutely. In one of my leagues, I ended up having him, Alvin Kamara, and I had LeSean McCoy, but I traded him for Kenyon Drake. So, you know, I'm hoping that obviously he keeps that major role back. As you said, he is a workhorse. He's the only running back in the league to have more than 85% of his team's rushing yards. So he is that workhorse back for sure.
Yep. Anything I missed, Dom, on the trade front?
No, I think we got everybody. We talked about Amari Cooper from last week. We talked about Carlos Hyde from the week before. There's a lot more trades this year than there usually are. It's almost like, you know, baseball trade deadline day or NHL or NBA trade deadline day rather than the NFL, because there's usually only a couple trades a year in the NFL. So it was nice having that flurry and having something to talk about. As we were talking about off air, it's almost like they were playing fantasy football this year as well in the trade market.
Yep, definitely good to see. It's always gives your team some hope when the trade deadline comes around if you think you need improvement. So like to see that continue and the NFL can continue to catch up to a sport like baseball that realizes that that's probably the optimal route. You can find all of our work at friendswithfantasybenefits.com. We're at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter. My personal Twitter at Roto underscore Juan, WAN. Dom, his Twitter is at EnvisionFF. That's EnvisionFF. We're both pretty active on Twitter, so if you guys have a question, hit us with it. Anything else you got cooking, Dom, to pay attention for?
Yeah, you can catch my Nickels to Dimes article on Friends with Fantasy Benefits. You can find my other articles on fantasyhowry.com and rotorballer.com, and you can find my rankings on fantasypros.com. I've been in the top 10 3 of the first 8 weeks so far this year.
I've seen you up there, man. I'm getting killed, so good for you. But all right, guys, have a good night.